describe very clearly the act which, if performed, will invoke the sanctions of this injunction. And the word mass is vague. It does not tell him what will invoke the wrath of the court by way of a contempt. So even though you have the ex parte injunction, it is a vague order of the court. So, did not challenge the injunction, went ahead with the June 2nd rally. And that is a critical issue as far as the problem is concerned in this respect. First issue is he did not exhaust the state remedies. That's the first issue. The requirement to get to the Supreme Court is you must exhaust your state remedies. And he did not. He had plenty of time and to challenge the injunction, and he did not. So that is a critical issue as far as getting a hearing before the Supreme Court, to the failure to exhaust his remedy. And the remedy, of course, is a motion to dissolve or to modify, as I previously stated. And the contempt is violation of the injunction, of course, will invoke the contempt power. The rally was conducted peacefully, though the overflow blocked all traffic entering the housing project for 20 minutes. Well, as far as peacefully, you can put an issue over that, and there is no clear and present danger as far as the state is concerned. And traffic was interrupted for 20 minutes, and you can put over 20 minutes, you can put a de minimis concept as far as the injury to the state. Doe was subsequently charged with criminal contempt. Now, as far as criminal contempt is concerned, the one thing to understand, the difference between civil and criminal contempt is the discretion of the judge. It is purely discretionary. You only know that it's criminal contempt when the judge slams the hammer down and says, go to jail. If he slams the hammer down and says $500, then it's civil contempt. But as far as the denial or the violation of an injunction, it is discretionary with the court. However, the guidelines, as far as the court is concerned, is that when the court orders you to do something on behalf of the state, it is generally treated as criminal contempt, whereas if the court orders you to perform to another party, to do something for another party, then it is generally treated as a civil contempt, and the fine is deemed to be sufficient. But it is discretionary as far as the court. The court refused to consider Doe's constitutional objections to the injunction, holding that he should have raised such objections by available state procedures prior to the demonstration. And the issue that is being vague, and that whole sentence, there's no way to pick out one word, that the whole sentence is the adequate and independent state grounds theory. The adequate and independent state grounds theory as far as going to the Supreme Court. In other words, if we go to the Supreme Court, which we are, if the court can find some adequate and independent state grounds upon which to decide the case, then it will not decide the federal issue. Okay, the court also denied those requests for a retrial. Well, the issue, of course, is Louisiana versus Duncan in 6 months, and it found Doe guilty and sentenced him to 2 years probation. So it is more than 6 months, and he is entitled to trial by jury. It's not how much jail time you get, but what you could possibly get under Duncan versus Louisiana. Violation thereof could result in imprisonment for that term. So he is entitled to trial by jury. The Supreme Court has excessive review of both the original legal action challenging those evictions and the contempt conviction. Now here, in common law as well as every place else, you could search the call of the plexus and see if they're asking more than one thing, if it is a general direction question or whether it is a specific direction question. And in this case, note carefully that the Supreme Court has accepted review, and I'll go into that issue in a moment. And the first thing that they have accepted review of is the original legal action. The original legal action challenging those evictions. follow-up question, take note separately, and could be and in the conjunctive is the excessive review as far as the contempt conviction. The contempt conviction. Court from which he can get a decision. If this is the highest state court, Ordinarily, they'll tell you it is the highest state court, or he went to the Supreme Court. Here, all they tell you is he was in state court. And on that basis, it does leave open the adequate independent state grounds. It's a procedural issue that he has overlooked. And he must exhaust his remedy within the state by the appellate process. Otherwise, the court will not hear it. All right. Yeah, assuming, we'll come back to that in the second part of the question also. Assuming it is the highest state court, then going to the third paragraph, the state action, the legal issue to be underlined in the third paragraph is proof of state action. It is a state housing project, and the director is an employee of the state. And on that basis, it would qualify as state action. The particular state action involved here is the denial of his right of renewal. Denial of his right of renewal. Now, in the same paragraph, as far as state action, you say that there is state action, the denial of the right of renewal. Point out that all state action is subject to the 14th Amendment due process protection, meaning fairness in dealing with the people of the state. That's the fundamental level of challenge as far as any state action is due process. Anything that the state does, it must do fairly. All right, in this case, as far as the due process of the 14th Amendment is concerned, and in relation to state action, you could point out that there are essentially two due process restraints as far as state action is concerned. There are essentially two due process restraints as far as state action is concerned. All right, then go to paragraph 4 and discuss due. And in common law, as we go through today, you're going to see that when I switch paragraphs, I'm simply switching to a different constitutional issue. In every paragraph, I'm going to label something and use some words that come out of the Constitution. I'm not going to say anything that does not relate specifically to a constitutional issue. So when I switch paragraphs, if I fail to mention some language of the Constitution, then you throw your hands up and yell and scream because you're not getting your due. And that means that every time that you write a paragraph, it must include a separate and distinct challenge to the action of the state. So, in the fourth paragraph, the first due process challenge to the state action is whatever the state does, whatever this director does, the housing director, must have or be directed towards a legitimate objective. It must be directed. The action of the director has to be within the concept of due process, legitimate objective. The objective is not a legitimate one, then obviously it's a denial of due process. Now, go ahead in the fourth paragraph and what is the objective of the, use the facts of the problem. What is the objective as far as the director is concerned? He doesn't want troublemakers around. Well, no one wants troublemakers around. Is that a due process legitimate objective as far as state action, as far as not wanting troublemakers in the housing project? And the answer is probably yes. As far as the not wanting troublemakers. Then you go to the fifth paragraph very quickly, and the fifth paragraph is the second due process challenge to the action of the state is that the means employed by the order of the director must be reasonably related to accomplishing the legitimate objective or permitted end, the means employed. Now, in the fifth paragraph, you must factually go legitimate objective of not having troublemakers in the housing project? Answer is yes. If you kick out all the troublemakers, you won't have troublemakers. So as far as due, this is what I mean by due process one and due process two, which is the fundamental challenge to any state action, any federal action. The objective has to be a legitimate one, and the means employed must be reasonably related to accomplishing that. Now, when you finish, as you finish the fifth paragraph on due process two, you should point out that the action then would be valid. The action of the director then should be upheld, provided it does not abridge, and this is the magic transitional paragraph, provided it does not abridge any other constitutionally protected right of Doe. Any other constitutionally protected right. Now that sets the stage for making other constitutional arguments. All right, going to the sixth paragraph then. Doe is going to argue that the action of the director abridges his First Amendment right of fair comment, freedom of speech, fair comment as far as a public official is concerned. And if he is not a public official, it is a fair comment on a newsworthy item related to a group of people, the increase in rent. He's going to allege that, and this First Amendment, this is really the key interpretation. He is going to allege that the nature of the abridgment of his First Amendment right is to deny him the equal right of remaining a tenant with other people because he exercised his freedom of speech. In other words, he's being punished for the exercise of his constitutionally protected right under the First Amendment. And in including in the sixth paragraph, we might even mention that this is analogous, this is very analogous to private retaliatory forms of eviction. This is kind of analogous, just so that you can annotate it. Retaliatory eviction is a big issue these days. A lot of 75, 76 cases in the retaliatory eviction. And this is really an analogy to the retaliatory type of eviction. In one of your questions yesterday, you had that issue about property. Okay, the sixth paragraph then is he's alleging that the action of the state abridges his First Amendment right because not only his, what is if anyone is kicked out if they complain, it's not a problem as far as his First Amendment right. You'd even point out that it, the nature of the state action is to chill the freedom of speech of everyone, not just him. Okay, the seventh paragraph. He would allege that the action of the state is a denial of equal protection. He was denied equality as far as the housing project. He was not given an equal opportunity to renew his lease as were all other people. As far as the nature of the equal protection argument here, it is the nature of the action of the state really does not go to a fundamental right. It really doesn't go to a fundamental right because he can live elsewhere, but that's not the issue. But still, it is a denial of equal protection. It is an invidious form of discrimination. It is extremely invidious as a form of discrimination to terminate the tenancies and prevent renewal of people who exercise their freedom of speech. So there's no question as far as the equal protection denial is concerned. He has an equal right to renewal as well as anybody else. Right in the eighth paragraph, and I would conclude that the state court's decision was wrong. the constitutional issue, a procedural issue. In this case, I would again raise the issue as far as the contempt conviction of the adequate and independent state grounds theory. In this case, the adequate and the procedural issue, the strict necessity rule for the Supreme Court of failing to hear the contempt conviction, is that he did not exhaust his remedies. More specifically, he had from May 5th until June 2nd to make a motion to dissolve or modify the ex parte injunction, and he did not do so. And the law requires an affirmative act where there is time to do so. So under these circumstances, it is possible. It is possible the court would refuse the case on adequate independent state grounds. The failure to move. Now, you have two in the field of remedies. Let's write it down as a remedy concept. You have two remedies when you're faced with an ex parte injunction. One is the motion, you make a motion to dissolve or modify. And if that is denied, then you have another extraordinary remedy, which you are required to know, and that is a writ of mandamus. A writ of mandamus, which would compel the issuance of a permit or the allowance as far as the park is concerned. The problem as far as the writ of mandamus, though, is generally it is directed to the performance of a ministerial duty, such as the issuance of a permit. But in a remedy concept, the Supreme Court tends to look at the exhausting of all remedies within the state, including appeal and including, where there is time to do so, the making a motion to modify or dissolve. So in this case, you point out that the Supreme Court may reject the contempt conviction, but then you should conclude by saying, however, since it is a preferred right under the First Amendment, the court may decide the federal issue anyway, because you have to move on. All right, the second paragraph then is, Doe is going to allege that the ex parte injunction is a First Amendment prior restraint. It is a prior restraint. The ex parte injunction is a prior restraint as far as the freedom to demonstrate. The First Amendment certainly protects demonstration. No question as far as that is concerned. But then you go ahead and say that the First Amendment right to demonstrate is not absolute. It is not absolute, and areas the state may close areas because of some compelling state interest related to time, number, and place, etc. Now, the fact situation as far as your First Amendment balancing in this case is what had he planned? Quote, NASA, where? In a small park. So the interest seems to be balanced in favor of the state as far as the prior restraint is concerned. The next paragraph, the third paragraph, I think that I would raise the issue that ex parte order, first issue as far as the ex parte order, is the denial of due process. It really is a denial of due process because you do not have a chance to argue any issue. Remember that an ex parte order is issued on the basis of one party's complaint and no notice to you. You as the party enjoined have no notice, but then you go ahead, as far as due process is concerned, even though it seemingly is a denial of due process and fairness, it is a necessary remedy, but granted only where there is a very heavy evidence that irreparable harm will ensue. It is granted only where there is a heavy showing that irreparable harm will ensue. Now, using the facts, is there evidence of irreparable harm? The answer is yes, massive rally, small park, etc. So the next party order properly issued. All right, the next paragraph, which is paragraph 4, is the injunction is void for vagueness. Due process void for vagueness. He would challenge that the injunction is void on its face. It is vague and explain vagueness. As far as an injunction is concerned, the injunction must state the specific act which, if performed, will invoke the sanction of the law. The reason is it can be punished by imprisonment. So it has to meet the due process standard of certainty as far as the criminal statute. And that which is allegedly vague is, quote, any mass rally. So it is, I would conclude, as far as the injunction, that it is void on its face. It is void on its face. Then, however, the law is such that it, even if it is void on its face, where there is time to dissolve or modify, you must obey. It says not having any mass rally, you must obey to the extent of no rally. He must obey not having any rally. He must obey the injunction until it is dissolved or modified. And he did not do so. All right, the fifth paragraph then is contempt conviction. Is contempt conviction proper under circumstances where you have violated a void on its face injunction? The answer is yes. The high respect for the order of the court, even though void on its face, allows criminal contempt convictions. It is the proper method of punishment for violation of the court order. There is, you might just note as far as contempt conviction, it is summary and non-bailable. It is summary. That doesn't mean you don't get a hearing. In other words, you get a contempt hearing. But it's summary in nature. It is non-bailable. And more importantly, and the critical issue of the contempt, is there is no obligation on the part of the court to take evidence. There is no obligation on the part of the court to take evidence on the constitutionality of the injunction itself. In other words, he goes into court on the contempt conviction, and he argues that the injunction is void on its face. The judge can say that's irrelevant. And it is. It is irrelevant. The judge is under no obligation to hear evidence on any constitutional issue. The court has great latitude in issuing the contempt conviction, and it is properly issued in this case. The next question is trial by jury. Is there a right to trial by jury for the contempt? And the answer is, under Duncan versus Louisiana, it depends on the nature of the penalty. If it is 6 months, or less, no. But here, the potential penalty is 2 years maximum, so he is entitled to a trial by jury. If he didn't get it, it would be reversed.